This is the Athletic Baseball Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
And that is hammered! Oh my!
Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry. You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
High drive! Left field!
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it?
You're listening to The Roundtable with Grant Brisby, Andy McCullough, and Mark Carrig on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode number 83 of The Roundtable. I am Grant Brisby. I'm here with Anna McCullough, and we have a pinch hitter for Mark Carrig. We've got Tim Britton. Tim, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, Grant. I mean, huge shoes to fill for Mark. I will try my best to bring the Buck Showalter heat as much as possible.
Can you act like super distracted and then like jump in like 10 minutes after we've been talking about something? Is that something like in your skill set?
I mean, I'm here at the start of the episode. I don't know. I think I've already wrecked that, so.
Hey, do you have any references from covering baseball in 2015 you want to lean on?
Oh, man. Like, we can have some real Rick Porcello conversations if you want. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A lot of baseball these days is, you know, can you run the bases well? Can you hit singles? Does your bullpen have three guys in it? That's what you need to win a World Series. Home runs. You can win a World Series hitting three home runs in seven games or whatever the Giants did.
Grant, of the three Giants teams, right, 14 is the worst or whatever, but they were the lowest in true talent. Which one's better, 10 or 12?
I think 10 by the end of the season when you've got Burrell and Ross and you've got a functioning Lincecum and Kane. I think that's the highest true talent. I think they underperformed in the regular season.
Imagine saying about a team that won three World Series, yeah, the best team was because they had Cody Ross in the middle of their lineup.
They wanted Jose Guillen, but he got busted by the FBI for the performance-enhancing drugs. That's the whole reason the Giants have a dynasty.
The thing about dynasties in baseball is, like, with the Yankees dynasty, right, what they did was, like, you know, incredible and, like, will probably never happen again. But at least you can be like, well, they had, like, Derek Jeter and, like, Roger Clemens and the best closer ever. And with the Giants, it's like, well, you know, Roy Halladay threw a fastball to Cody Ross. You know?
I think about it every day. Hey, you know, it's Brooks Conrad. If he doesn't do that, the Giants sign like Jacoby Ellsbury because they're panicking and before 2011. And none of the World Series has happened. So I don't know. This is an awkward segue, but I got to get really serious with you guys. You listen to us. Now we want to hear from you. We're asking you, the listeners, to fill out a quick survey about you and your podcast habits by going to theathletic.com/survey24. Three lucky entries will win $100 worth of Amazon gift cards. So whether you're a longtime listener or a new one, we want your feedback. Go to theathletic.com/survey24. That's theathletic.com/survey24. The link is also in our episode description. Thank you. Not awkward at all.
I thought you were addressing me at first. Like, I was a little concerned that I was not ready for where this was going.
What do you think about the pod? You want a gift card? Fill out a survey on the pod.
I listened to you guys during the season, but the winner, come on. Who has time?
That's the black tar, you know, just the sticky. Like, you can't, you got to be a real addict if you're going to be listening in the off season. I don't blame you.
Hey, Grant, the Giants are back.
Giants are back, baby. They got... Hey, listen, hey,
it's not a bad deal.
I like their offseason so far. I do think maybe a second starting pitcher would help. You know, like if I had to pinpoint just my one major concern, it's that they have Logan Webb and like 17 rookies and second year players, all of whom are hurt. I guess Jordan Hicks, you know, he's interesting, and you got guys coming back. But, yeah, I like Chapman. I like the deal. If they're going to build a super sinker staff with Webb and Hicks and Cobb when he comes back, like, those are three of the top 10 sinker ballers in baseball. when it comes to the rotation. Like, that's, you want a solid defense behind them. So I like Chapman for that group. I think it's a good deal for them.
Yeah, I mean, certainly at the terms, right? Like, the downside risk on a three-year deal is pretty limited. And if he's good, he opts out, and it's like, okay, you know, you didn't buy the dip. I mean, I think that's just the concern with a player of Chapman's offensive profile, right? Is that, like, this guy could be theoretically like an 80 OPS hitter this coming season. He probably won't be. He's never been that. But, like, you see the trend is in that direction. And so if you're getting him, you know, for a three-year contract at 54, like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I think the question now, because there's some scouts are, I don't want to say scouts are torn, but, like, I've read it and heard it both ways on how elite his defense still is. He's obviously a pretty good defender, but, like, this idea of him being Brooks Robinson is probably not as accurate as maybe it was a few years ago, or at least in the Oakland days. But I don't know. We'll see. It should be better not playing on turf, right? Who knows? Tim, do you put that in your model, turf?
Andre Dawson. Turf.
Going back to the Andre Dawson days, yeah. the thing that always stood out to me about Chapman is, like, as the offseason went along and we're talking about the Boris, however many you want to put in that, Boris 4, Boris 5, the thing about Chapman was that, like, the other guys were all coming off really, really good seasons. You know, like, Bellinger could not have had a better 2023, and Snell won the Cy Young, and Montgomery was a game one starter for the team that won the World Series. Martinez had 33 home runs, and Chapman didn't have that to fall back on. And so the pillow contract always made more sense for him than any of the other guys, because, you know, good luck Blake Snell trying to top 2023 in a one-year deal. That's why he doesn't want to sign that. I think this makes the most, you know, if you're going to ask me 3 weeks ago, which of these guys is going to sign the one-year deal first, I would have said Chapman. Bellinger beat him to it, but the terms do make sense for the Giants here. You know, the Giants are like that team that has, like, a two-win player at every position, and that's, like, a really hard team to upgrade, because shortstop is the biggest question mark, I think, on the position player side. But it's like, you know, Wilmer Flores is fine. Like, he's not a star. JD Davis is okay, but it's tough to find, like, the Aaron Judge-like guy you're going to sign to make that team a lot better. The one fix.
It's the same thing that it's been for 5 years. They need someone to come up and be what Pablo Sandoval was for the was for them in 2009, where he just emerges. And now you've got this part of your young position player core. Who knows? Maybe it's Pablo Sandoval in 2024.
Yeah, maybe it's just Pablo Sandoval.
Maybe it's him again. But I mean, like, Luis Matos, like, you're not necessarily thinking about him, but he just turned 22. He's got some skills. He's in the best shape of his life. Don't you forget it. And, you know, maybe that, like, if that guy comes up and then all of a sudden one of your two win players becomes something more, that's, I think, what the Giants are hoping for. But this actually lets me segue into some extension talk. Tim is our extension guru here at The Athletic. It's a fun word to say, guru. And he is. He's one of those. And he knows everything about extensions for things that have been signed, things that will be signed. So what would it take for the Giants to extend Jung-Hoo Lee? buy out those option years? Because I've seen this guy. He's freaking great, man. I watched like six of his spring at bats and I'm all in. So how do we get a 13-year deal for Lee?
I've looked at it. I think Trout is probably the model you're looking at, and you just got to add the inflation, 45 per year probably at this point for the free agent years. So yeah, just add that on to the ages, what, 31 through 38 years, and you're good.
Fair enough. I did. Okay,
eight for 360.
Okay, I'm in. So what is the feeling like in the pit of your stomach when you work really hard on an extension article, an article about all these possible extensions? I'm sure that took you a long time, and there's a lot of information. It's a great article. When you get that notification that says Zach Wheeler has signed an extension, are you like, oh, cool, or are you like, oh, crap? Like, what? How are you feeling with that news?
Like, I would have preferred, like, more than a three-hour runway for that story. but, I mean, like, let's be honest. I've covered baseball for 15 years. Like, 95% of the stories I write have a three-hour runway. The worst feeling is when you write a whole thing like that and, like, nobody signs an extension. And you have, like, no way of kind of seeing if what you did was right. And, you know, for that story that ran Monday, it was about guys in their platform years going to be free agents at the end of the year. Really, most of those guys aren't signing extensions. Like, you know, Pete Alonso's not signing an extension. Corbin Burns probably not signing an extension. And so it is more of a theoretical exercise with some of those guys, getting a jump on what they'll look like in free agency. Wheeler was the one who stood out to me as a guy who might between, you know, the day that Monday morning and the start of the regular season might sign something. It's good that it happened. I would have preferred it happen like a day or two later. but it is nice to be able to look at it and be like, okay, get some instant feedback on how I looked at him versus how the industry and the Phillies valued him.
It was pretty close, right?
I said 3 for 112.5, so 37.5 AAV. He got 126 or 42 million average annual value. If you look at his comps in terms of WAR, which is, you know, Scherzer, Verlander, Cole, like he's worth it. Like he's up there. I said in the story that he could make a very good case to make $40 million a year or more. I thought maybe not having a Cy Young, not having a World Series championship with the Phillies the way some of those other guys did when they negotiated might hold him just a little bit below that mark, but it doesn't surprise me where he ended up. I mean, he's been probably the best pitcher in baseball since he signed that deal. So it's hard to argue against him.
Now that there's especially a lot of pitchers seem to be moving towards this like high AAV model, like do you foresee that being a trend? Like, I guess it won't be a trend in free agency. It'll more be a trend for guys who are like trying to tack on years where it's like, yeah, just give me another $80 million over these next two seasons and I'm here. And that seems like a pretty good business model for the teams in general because they're not buying the age so much.
Right. I mean, you look at like Verlander, who has signed who knows how many contracts at this point. He had the long one with Detroit, the extension that I think ran, you know, 2013 through 2019 or something. And he signed a bunch of deals with Houston that were short term, you know, even like the deal where he missed a year because of Tommy John, like it still was OK because the other year was pretty good. So that's a way to maximize your earnings. I think you basically split them into two camps. It's kind of like the guys who are 33, 34 and up and still pitching really well, like Wheeler and those guys, they'll go shorter term. And, you know, Corbin Burns hitting free agency. I think he even told Ken Rosenthal in the story that was running on Tuesday, like, I don't want to do this every other year. Like, you know, because the downside is look, the Trevor Bauer approach, like that was his plan and it did not work out in a big way. So I think in free agency, you'll still see guys try to get like that Cole approach where, you know, you get 8 or 9 years, you maybe build yourself in a little opt-out kind of thing the way Cole did. To get the extra year on top of that, that's probably still the model for guys who are 29 and 30.
With Verlander and Scherzer, are they just anomalies as far as, listen, they're freaks, and this isn't like indicative of a trend where medical science is better and baseball training is better, and you're going to have guys extending their primes or pitching late into their 30s and doing really well? Are they just freaks, or is there something to the idea that if a pitcher starts to go that big AAV because they're thinking, well, you know, I'm going to stay healthier, like a Verlander or a Scherzer, is that, I don't know where I'm going with this, but like, you know what I'm saying? Is that part of their thinking?
I don't want to extrapolate too much from Steve Cohen giving out two contracts to guys that probably didn't work out that well. I don't know if you've heard, Grant, like Max Scherzer is not going to pitch the first half of the season and Verlander might start the year on the IL. So.
And neither actually plays for the Mets anymore.
Right, yeah. They're being paid quite a bit of money by the New York Mets to pitch in the state of Texas. So they are two, you know, I'm not going to use the word unicorns. They are unique players in that, you know, when they were signing a lot of those deals, you knew they were already Hall of Famers. And so, you know, and even Scherzer didn't, you know, he had the long contract with Washington. He signed the one deal with the Mets. It's not like he parsed that into year by year the same way that Verlander kind of did. So I'd be hesitant to rule it too much of a trend, but certainly like the way those guys were valued over the course of those contracts plays a role into Zach Wheeler getting what he gets. The same way that like Wheeler being as good as he was for the first part of his deal with Philly, you know, that helps Carlos Rodon get paid and say, hey, like I'm kind of like Zach Wheeler. You know the potential I have. I've showed it a little bit, like, and you know, get me to a team that's not the White Sox and I'll show it even more. It hasn't quite worked out the same way.
It worked out for the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, we're at like Kevin Gausman, another guy, who like you've got prospect pedigree. You haven't done it consistently at the big league level, but you know, you say, hey, I look a lot like Zach Wheeler. I could be the best pitcher in baseball for the next 3 years at a lower rate than you're going to pay Corbin Burns or something. And Gausman's deal's worked out pretty well for Toronto at this point.
Gausman has been pretty good for them. And he's like, at this point, he's in maybe year three of the deal. And it's probably like already earned back the money, I guess, by being great for is a 5-year deal, I think. With Wheeler though, like Grant, you were talking about Verlander and Scherzer being unicorns. Like I think Wheeler's kind of a unicorn, like a guy who at 30 turns it on to that degree, you know, in this era, not like say playing in like 2001, you know, when they, like weren't like, you know what I mean? Like it, at that age pattern, and to get to this point where, because he had been, you know, he had had surgery, because he had, you know, not been like used at his, I remember writing about this maybe going into 2019 or something like this. So going into the 2020 season, like comparing like Wheeler's career to like Alex Wood's career, right? And Alex Woods has like a really good career and has like done a lot of things, won a World Series, you know, but like he was pitched a lot when he was younger, you know, with Atlanta, and dealt with a lot of, you know, physical issues, whereas like that have caught up to him now at the same age. And like, and Wheeler like didn't get those big league innings. So if you look at like who has actually had like up to free agency, right, it's like clearly Wood has had the better career, but they were betting on Wheeler because he had like the life on his fastball that was kind of untapped. You know, there was a thought, get him away from the Mets and he'll thrive. And like, yeah, he's emerged as a sort of pitcher where like, if you had to start game 7 of the World Series, is there someone you would rather have on the mound than him? Like Cole? Maybe, but Wheeler, you know, I don't know. Like, he's really, like, leveled up in a way that I don't know many pitchers do once they get to free agency.
There was a long time where I was ghoulishly charting his war with the Mets versus what Carlos Beltran did in the second half of the Giants.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. You know what I mean? And there's Wheeler pulled ahead. And, you know, obviously now he's Zach Wheeler. It is a weird career path. And you've seen teams bet on the arm before. Gilmesh. Right? Like the Royals, when they signed him, it wasn't on the body of work in the past. It was the body of work in the future. I think Darren Dreyfuss was a little bit like that, where you had just this guy. Of course, I mean, look at this guy. He's gonna just wait for it. It never quite happened. Wheeler was a little bit more proven than that, but it's a similar sort of gamble. And man, did it work for the Phillies.
The interesting thing with Wheeler, so I started covering the Mets in 2018. So I had missed, he had missed 2015 and 16 with surgery, and 17 he was back, but not effective. And in 18, like he started the season in the bullpen. Like he was not, Seth Lugo was their fifth starter. Zach Wheeler was not in the rotation. And it was like, you know, a lot of times when you watch a team regularly, like there is this cognitive dissonance between like what the stats say and what you see. And most of the time, what I see is wrong. And the stats went out. But with Wheeler in like the first half of 18, and he had a great second half in 18, but in the first halves of 18 and 19, I'm like, man, this guy really pitches better than his line consistently. He goes 6 innings, gives up 4 runs, and you're looking at it, you're like, if they called that 1-1 pitch a strike in the third inning, like he would have thrown 7 shutout, you know? Seeing that like come to fruition, like in 19, he had a 5 ERA the first couple months of the season. It was just like he gave up runs in one inning every game, and it was 4 runs. And he had as many 1-2-3 innings as Jacob deGrom did during deGrom's Cy Young season. It was just a matter of like putting together when he was in the stretch. And there were, you know, these small things that added up for him in the ERA. But you could see like, man, if you just fix these little things, like everything else is there to click. I didn't expect it to this degree. And certainly when the Phillies gave him $118 million, I think my projection for Wheeler that offseason was like $80 million or something. So I didn't expect him to get that. But for him to reward it the way, you know, for that Jason Stark could plausibly write that Zach Wheeler signed the greatest pitcher contract of all time, I don't think we foresaw that coming, even if you were bullish on him in 2019.
You're talking about how, you know, your eyes versus the stats, right? Like I have a similar sort of org test where it's like, well, did the team who signed him, or do I consider them smart, right? And, you know, when the Phillies did, I was just like, I don't know, man. But then I heard
it was the Phillies and the White Sox, right? Those are the two teams that were going after.
But then I heard the Twins were in on him, and I was like, oh, maybe. Yeah. I was like, well, let's see, because they have computers, right? Like, I'm sure those computers are saying something. Anyway, but yeah, so much of like what we do is based on the, you know, the Rockies signing Chris Bryant. You're like, ay. What could go right?
That's, you know, like the Sam Miller tweet in reverse. Like, terrible signing for the Rockies.
Exactly.
Who'd they get and what did they pay?
Yeah, and it's a good reminder because obviously, you know, the Phillies front office was that time was led by Matt Klentak, right? Not Dave Dombrowski. They have more information than we do. You know, these guys are trying hard, you know, and they're able to see things. And clearly the Philly scouts, their analytics department, all of them like saw what, you know, kind of you were perceiving, Tim, I guess, watching him every day. And it ends up being, you know, one of the best contracts in baseball history.
it's wild to think back to, if we're going to go back to 2015, 2016, covering baseball, like that Mets rotation.
We do that all the time. Let me tell you a story about Eric Hosmer. Anyway.
To look at like the four big names that the Mets had in their rotation at that time, and sorry to Steven Matz to not include him, but you had Harvey, Syndergaard, DeGrom, and Wheeler. You know, you look at like what those guys were making in arbitration, and like Matt Harvey looked like he was going to make a ton of art. Like he was the guy you would have signed to an extension if you were the Mets at that point in time. And Wheeler, I think, made $8 million in arb through 3 years. And like DeGrom was on pace to make over 50 before he signed his extension. And now on the other side of it, for Wheeler to be the best, most consistent, most durable of those guys after he missed basically 2.5 seasons, it's just pretty crazy.
Tim, when you get done with your book about how the 1980s Oakland Athletics connected with a city and sort of really had a lasting firmament on the Bay Area, that book you've been working on, I would love to read something about that Mets rotation in a narrative form.
The funny thing about it is like there are Mets fans who are like, it's like second coming of Generation K. and
remember how that turned out?
you want to be like, wait a minute, you want a pennant with these guys. You want a pennant with them. DeGrom won 2 Cy Youngs. Wheeler gets Cy Young votes. Syndergaard finished top 5 in a Cy Young. Like, you had 5 pitching prospects like this, and you got good outcomes. Like, the worst outcome is Matt Harvey, who got Cy Young votes also. Like, every one of these guys except Matt's got Cy Young votes, and Matt's was a rookie of the year.
Right,
like,
Harvey started an All-Star game, yeah.
To get that, I mean, that's like a 90th percent outcome for that kind of pitching talent. So it's well done. They just didn't they weren't able to prolong it. They didn't, if they signed Zach Wheeler to an extension in the middle of the 2019 season that doesn't cost them $118 million, it wouldn't have, then it's a really different path that they've taken these last couple of years.
Yeah, that reminds me of, that's good perspective, because back in the turn of the millennium, the Giants had 3 pitching prospects in the top 20 with Kurt Ainsworth, Jerome Williams, and Jesse Foppert, and none of them did anything. I mean, that's almost the likeliest scenario when you're talking about pitching prospects. I don't know, maybe not in the modern game, but certainly to have that kind of success and go to a pennant. And also, just because I've got brain worms, you're talking about how Wheeler emerging from that pack to have the most valuable career. That reminds me of when I read some article back in the day about how actually the real talent in the Cubs rotation, it's not Kerry Wood or Mark Pryor, it's Carlos Zambrano. And I was like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Are you just use your eye? And who had the better career, right?
That's
it was
crazy.
Zambrano. Yeah. Wow. Like he was the guy that stuck it out the longest.
Yeah. That's funny. If you talk to any member of, the Braves diaspora, they'll quote, the recently passed Paul Snyder, who always said it takes 10 to get 1 when it comes to pitching prospects. I think the industry's gotten more efficient, but that's the general, philosophy. I mean, it's just pitching prospects are, someone once said that prospects will break your heart and also that there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. I don't think that's as true as it used to be, obviously, but it's still kind of true.
I'm using a baseball prospectus to elevate my microphone right now. And also, I'm hoping that some of the stats seep up and, my voice is filtered through them and I sound smarter.
What if we just did a whole pod where we talked in 2003 stats, where we just talked about VORP? Remember VORP? VORP was cool.
VORP was cool.
Travis Hafner, the king of VORP.
You guys hear about this dips theory? Man, it's wild. It's like pitchers don't control the balls in play.
Look, I think it's great that the sport has made room for the nerds, and now we sort of casually use WAR and stuff like that. I wear glasses. Like, even though I am a jock, I do sort of, people think I'm a nerd. We cannot let the theater dorks in. We cannot let the Savannah Bananas in. Anyway.
It's time to start shoving people back in lockers is what you're
exactly
saying.
We cannot have this. Anyway, lots of
theater dorks. Hold on a second. I've told this on the internet a lot. I don't think I've done it here. I played action in West Side Story. Have you heard this story? In high school, I played action and I was really good. Like I blew the doors off. In the audience was the girl who played Anita. She was the babysitter for Jeff Brantley. And so Jeff Brantley came to see this family friend. And after the play, he said, God, who was that kid who played action? God, he was so good. End of anecdote.
Do you think the Mets are going to extend Pete Alonso?
I haven't heard Andy Screed on the Savannah Bananas in a little while, but I just am waiting for his follow-up book about diving deep into the bananas, because I think you can call it first of their kind, about just kind of a different approach to this. I think that's the way to go.
I like them.
I think they're neat.
I wish the best for everyone in this life.
You're so churlish.
I saw the clip with Peter Pan, and I was like, come on, man. Baseball's a good game. Like, it's fun. It's fun watching baseball. And this is me saying this.
But what about, okay, so this is just a tradition. The Globetrotters. Weren't the Globetrotters fun?
I mean, okay, but like, no. Actually, no. I'll just say no.
He's spinning the ball on his finger. Take it. Yeah.
You were betting on the Generals.
Yeah. By the way, that's another reference Grant does not get at all.
No, I do. And listen, okay. So apparently I missed a reference to Moon Pies from Jasper. And I looked it up. And it was season 9, okay? Season 6 is where I'm encyclopedic. App 7, 8, 9, 10. It drops off a little, so.
Tim is a legit Simpsons fan. And he will come on here and say that you are stealing Simpsons valor.
There were two ones you missed from, like, classic Simpsons era. I think, you know, I can understand season 9's not season 6. Like, we don't need to get into that, obviously.
Moon Pie. We need
Forp to understand that.
What a time to be alive.
You're still watching season 9. No, people weren't checking out.
Exactly. Exactly. Thank you. All right, let's get back to baseball before we, like, get fully canceled on this show.
All right. Extensions. Is there someone you wanted to write about or someone you've been thinking about, someone that you didn't cover because you had a very specific window for your most recent article? Evan Carter, Paul Skeens. Is there a 15-year-old that the Braves have a handshake deal that maybe they could extend after they actually sign him? Who's in the market for an extension?
I mean, it's interesting because, like, I put out the call on our Athletic Slack channel for other baseball writers. Like, who do you want to see, like, extension information for? And I got, like, 80 names back, basically. And, like, most of them were pre-arb guys and, like, you know, people who are, you know, in the, like, Grayson Rodriguez area, like, guys who don't even have a full year of service time. Those are really hard to figure out because we've seen more extensions in that area of late, you know, Corbin Carroll's, certainly Julio Rodriguez and even Bobby Witt Jr. But especially for pitchers in that vein, like last year I did it for Alek Manoah and Shane McClanahan. And it was like, oh man, like you could sign these guys.
So it's your fault.
$70 million. and neither team, like, and I think I said at the time that, you know, if you're those two guys, you probably don't do it. Because you've already shown you can be all-star level, like wait till the pitching market gets reset in a couple of years and then do it when you're closer to free agency. They probably wish they had that $70 million at this point in time, the way things have gone the last year. So with pitchers, it's tough. With guys who have, you know, very little service time, like Evan Carter, you're taking a stab in the dark at like what arbitration is going to look like for them and just how difficult it is to project what they should make in free agency. Like Corbin Carroll's deal, 8 years and $111 million. When he signed that last spring, I was just thinking that, I think I talked to another writer in spring training that was a lot of money to give Corbin Carroll. We didn't quite understand it. And then you watch him play for a year, you're like, oh yeah, like he's probably worth the $28, $29 million a year they're paying him for his free agent year.
This guy's like a 7-win player. Holy smokes.
He's the human manifestation of baseball. Like he's just,
yeah,
he's a freak. I'm really sad that we don't have YouTube because right now I'm listening to Tim make astute points. And meanwhile, up in the right top right corner, Andy's got his spray bottle and he's wielding it like a Doc Holliday, just spraying his cat down from the table.
I actually have not pulled the trigger yet. It's just the threat of it is getting him to stop. He is staring at me, his tail wagging, like wants very badly to jump on my lap and claw me. But I'm keeping him at bay with the bottle.
You should just let him do it. You should let him do it. All right, back. Again, we're trying not to get canceled. It seems like Paul Skeens is if you're going to pick a guy, that is the Pirates probably want him in their rotation. Cat one. The Pirates probably want him in their rotation, but they're not. They're going to play service time games, and you know that. If you're Paul Skeens, do you want to be with the Pirates? You know, for that long,
right.
Do you want to lock yourself in? Like, what do you think about that specific situation?
it depends on how far Pittsburgh is willing to go, because we've seen certainly the way teams are looking at this. They used to be like explicitly team friendly, and now there's a little bit more risk involved. You know, like the difference between the Acuna deal, which was 8 years and $100 million, versus like what Carroll signed earlier in his career, or what Rodriguez and Witt Jr. are signing.
Wander Franco.
Yeah, it's a much different commitment. And so we haven't seen that quite to the extent on the pitching side. Spencer Strider stands out as one that that Atlanta signed early. It valued him as like an elite starting pitcher when he hits free agency. And that would be kind of, if I'm Skeens, that's what I'm looking at as a blueprint, is Spencer Strider, and seeing if I can get that kind of deal. You know, the Pirates, when they extended Reynolds, it was the biggest deal they'd ever done. And it was still, in my mind, like pretty below market for Brian Reynolds. I thought he was going to get more than he did. And that, you know, in any of these deals, like comfort and a guy's familiarity with the place, wanting the long-term security is different for everyone. But I would imagine Skeens would probably, like, unless they're giving him Strider money and above, would probably want to play it out a little bit.
And wouldn't he have to, like, in order to get Strider money, wouldn't he have to put up, like, a Strider season?
Yeah, you'd have to do something like that. Or, you know, like from his perspective, he's probably thinking, like, yeah, I could do that. So reward me as if I already have. And the Pirates are like, do it for 5 years, and then we'll give you what they gave Strider.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the Strider one, like, those Braves contracts have all sort of, I mean, some of, you know, the Albies contract is, you know, pretty brutal for the player. And the Acuna one is fairly brutal. It's hard to feel like that bad when you get $100 million, but it's way under what his value is. And then the rest have all sort of been generally felt team-friendly, but not as, like, bad. The Strider one was the first one where I think folks were like, hey, whoa, that's a lot of money for that young man. You can just go through ARB with him, you know. So I would be curious to see if other teams do that, because that one felt like pretty aggressive play. Not player friendlies. I don't know. We're pro labor here. But like, you know what I mean? Like, given his track record and just the fact that he's a pitcher, not like a third baseman, it felt like kind of more risk than a lot of teams would be willing to do for that young of a player.
I'm all about letting them go through ARB. You know what I mean? It's like what the Giants did with Logan Webb, I think, is a good template. You're paying a little bit more at the back end, but you're still saying, hey, we're going to buy out some free agent years. We're going to give you more money than you'd make in ARB. You get this idea. You get more of a sense when you're locking up a pitcher that first, second, third year of pre-ARB. Rich Hill is on Andy's Apple Watch. Can Rich Hill sign an extension if someone signs him, you know, lock up those age 48 to 50 years?
The Red Sox are calling Rich Hill right now.
Now, Rich is pretty committed to coming back. He said, during the summer. So his son's playing Little League. He wants to be there for that. And then, you know, he'd like to come back mid season. So anyway,
with Strider, cause that was 6 for 75. He signed it after his 1 year where he had like a 5 WAR season. So, you know, you're thinking like the arbitration, he's probably going to make like 45 or 50 million. That's what really, really good players make over 3 years of arbitration. And then you're looking at his, like, they're buying out a free agent year at 25 or 30 million. That's a lot, you know? And like I mentioned, you know, Manoa and McClanahan are recent examples of guys who you would have signed to that kind of deal last year. You're not signing them to it this year. And like we talked about with the Mets, you know, if you were looking at that 2015 rotation, like, get me all in on Matt Harvey. I'd probably take Syndergaard over DeGrom based off of their prospect track record. DeGrom and Wheeler are the two guys I would not have, I would have gone year to year with much more. And those are the two guys who turned out the best. So with pitching, I think it is a much riskier prospect for the team than it is with position players in general.
And even with position players, you get John Singleton or Scott Kingery. I mean, it's, people always think like, oh, it's just so owner friendly, these contracts, and why do they do this? There is something to several scores of millions in the bank. Like, I think that is enticing to me, certainly, but for the pre-arb guys.
I think Andrew Friedman's track record on this is instructive in some ways, and what sort of teams should be targeting deals like this. If you look at, you know, with the Tampa Bay Rays, right, the Rays were like super aggressive about signing guys to, you know, sort of pre-free agency extensions, pre-ARB extensions in the case of like Evan Longoria, you know, but there was James Shields, there was Wade Davis, I think there was Jeremy Hellickson. You know, they were super aggro on like, hey, if you want to sign up, like we'll lock you in for, you'll have like enough money that you don't really have to worry, and we'll have, you know, some cost certainty. And then he goes to the Dodgers, and how many of those deals have they done? And some of it, right, is like Corey Seager and Cody Bellinger are represented by Scott Boras. They're not interested in that type of deals. Like, you know, but Walker Buehler, they didn't do, you know, Will Smith, they haven't done yet. Like, it lets you know how teams who have kind of endless trunks of money view the value of those type of contracts, whereas teams who have a limited resources and, you know, want to have some more cost certainty, like that's where it makes sense from a team side.
If you do a five of them, and three, you know, four of them don't really work out, but one really does, you get like the Jose Altuve initial extension with the Astros, that pays for the others by far. And so from a team perspective, it's like, you don't need to hit on all of them. You don't even need to hit on half of them. If enough of them work out and work out in a major way, it pays off for you.
That sort of logic applies to kind of, it seems like how the Mets are approaching the situation with Pete Alonso, right? And that, like, there's obviously clamoring from the fans to re-sign Alonso. He's a player who, you know, has kind of an outsized sort of importance in, you know, the fan base's perspective on the team. And it seems like the team is basically just like, well, let's play it out. Like, you know, go to free agency and like, they, you know, they seem interested in bringing him back, which makes sense. He's a good player. But this idea that they're just going to give him $250 million without having to match someone else's offer, like that doesn't make a ton of sense if you're a club with unlimited resources. Am I reading that right, Tim?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think the Mets look at like, they've got the Brandon Nimmo blueprint that they pulled 2 years ago, which was like Nimmo hired Scott Boras as an agent the year before, you know, going into his platform year, had a great season, went out in free agency, saw what else was out there, came back to the Mets, said, hey, this is what I can get. And the Mets said, sure, we'll top that, remain with the Mets. You know, Alonso, there's a bit more of a risk-reward pull there because the Mets could probably get by without Brandon Nimmo. Like, he's a good, important player, but he doesn't mean the same to the fan base, or did not at that time, that Alonso feels to them now. You know, a player's platform year and how they perform in it really does influence how a fan base feels about him. If you had told Mets fans at the start of 2022 that like Jacob DeGrom will sign elsewhere and you'll like be totally fine and happy about that, that would have been a very strange thing. And that was generally the sentiment among a lot of Mets fans. So we don't know how they'll feel about Alonso come October, November. You know, the Mets are in a position where, you know, they're not, if they were the Brewers or someone else, where they have to say, okay, like, we need to give Alonso what he wants now because there's no way we're re-signing him in free agency once he gets out there. The Mets feel like there's probably a disconnect between what Alonso thinks he's worth and what the industry will think he's worth. They have probably been strengthened in that thinking by what has happened to Boras's clients this offseason. They can say, like, hey, you go out and see what you want, what you can get, and we'll match it or top it. And as long as he's not like super alienated by that thinking, then he will come back to them and they can do that. There is always the chance that he's just like, no, man, like I'll get what I want from some other team and I'm not going to give you that opportunity because I've been annoyed by this. That's always the risk involved. Or there's the risk that another team says, yeah, like the, you know, no team pulls the Mariners on Robbie Cano situation and says, yeah, we'll give you $250 million. And the Mets say, that's not what we want to do, so we'll let you go.
But that was also very much a situation where the Yankees were like, oh, no, how can we match this? Oh, geez, I guess you have to leave. Ah, you know?
With the Mets and DeGrom, you know, if DeGrom signs for like 2 years and $80 million somewhere, it looks a little different than if he signs for five and 185 the way he did.
That's like the Freddie Freeman, you know, like, I want 6 years, and Alex Anthopoulos being like, yeah, I'll get David Forrest on the line, please.
There is the segment of Mets fans who are like, we should just do what Atlanta did and get Matt Olson, which like,
okay,
yeah, it'd be, it'd sure, right, if that person existed again somewhere to a team that was willing to trade him for probably not that much, and that guy was going to like immediately sign an 8-year extension with you. That backup plan doesn't quite exist for them the same way.
One time Ned Yost was getting he was taking some criticism about like who they were playing at third base, and he was like, do you want me to just shake the third base tree? Third baseman balls out? Like, there's no Matt Olson tree, you know? With Alonso, right, like the forgive me if I'm missing someone in this, but the two like best first baseman comps in the in this sort of era, that's Freeman and Goldschmidt, right? They're better players than Alonso. I don't want to say significantly better, but they're clearly better players. But given the passage of time, like how does inflation factor in trying to figure out like where he fits with that?
Yeah, like one of the things that I've tried to work on is I don't know exactly how baseball inflation compares to like national inflation. Cause that like, you know, I factor in inflation, and it used to be like, I would use like kind of cruder elements and it'd be like, a couple percentage points a year. keep it pretty static. There were actually years where it went down. But now you look at it and it's like, oh, like I have to add 30% to that deal signed 6 years ago. That's kind of what the national average is. And baseball, you know, Steve Cohen talked about it at the start of last spring training that like they ended up spending more on guys that they wanted than they expected because he's like, well, I guess inflation hits baseball too. So if you look at like the Freeman deal, I think the way I've calculated the inflation would be like 28 or 29 million per year. Goldschmidt, the deal with St. Louis, the initial one, would be about 30 million per year. Boris will probably try to bring back like Prince Fielder and Mark Teixeira and older deals of, again, guys who, you know, were probably better than Alonso in terms of the all-around package that had higher wars for sure. And those deals, because they were so long ago, let me look up what Teixeira's deal would be, you know, 32 million per season, Fielder's 31 and a half. So that sets an even higher bar. So, you know, it's creating that bar and looking at it, like in the story, I mentioned that, you know, Alonso offensively compares well to those guys. You know, the OPS plus, the home run rate is pretty similar to what Teixeira and Fielder were able to do. But Teixeira was an outstanding first baseman defensively. Fielder got on base a little bit more often. So, you know, he's still a little bit short of those guys, well short of them in war, but probably not. You know, that's where the disconnect exists. The Mets say, like, this guy's a 3-4 win player pretty consistently. He's not a 6-win MVP candidate year in and year out the way some of those other guys are. Why would we pay him $32 million per season? And a lot of those people can say, like, he's right there with these guys who are making that amount.
I'm just going to look up Chris Davis on Baseball Reference because it's been a minute.
That's the other one. That's about $29 million in today's money.
Definitely didn't have the earlier career that Alonso, you know, Alonso's just been consistent. Boom. Like if it's a low OPS plus, it's 120 or something where Davis had that huge spike and that's what the Orioles were paying for.
Yeah, he had the two big years and the three going in. So like Davis's OPS plus in his career, I think it was like 122 and Alonso's about 134. He can say like that should be my baseline is basically what Davis got and try to claim that and see how it goes from there.
Alonso is just such a tough player for me to evaluate because he just has that skill set that I just because I have that inherent like nerd in me where I'm like 318 on base, you know, like when I know that on base does not mean what it used to in this when pitchers are so good and like his skill is he hits the ball over the fence. But there's a part of me that still just like looks at the classically beautiful 300, 400, 500 line from Freddie Freeman. And I'm like, ooh, that's the sort of player that I want to build. I don't know. Like, that's just maybe just like a personal nerd bias I have. But like, there is something to the, I don't know. We don't need to talk too much about Pete Alonso, I guess. But that there's something when I see that line, I'm just like, ooh, I don't know what that's going to look like at 34.
The two things that pull on you are like, well, what do you need in the postseason to win? You need a guy who's just going to bop home runs for you. And Pete Alonso does that in a way that, like, no Met player in their history has ever done it. They've never had a player like this. And on the other end, you're like, if he's 10 or 15% worse, you know, if he's hitting 30 to 35 home runs instead of 40 to 50 home runs, well, that's a guy that you can get, you know, pretty, not easily, but a guy who's available in free agency every year for not that, for 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. You can build that guy out of spare parts, you know, relatively straightforwardly.
I think this is pretty important for him because like last year, the average and on-base percentage were down. He had, I believe, the second lowest BABIP of the century last season at 205. And so the Mets internally think that like he should be much better this year just in terms of like getting rewarded for balls in play. But, you know, it's how much better is the on-base up to 340? Is it up to 360? You know, what kind of difference does a year of better batted ball luck make for a guy like that?
Get 30 home run hitters out of spare parts. I cover a team. Last 30 home run hitter they had was Barry Bonds. I had a flip phone. Anyway, all right, we're out of time. We'd like to thank Tim Britton, our contract guru, for coming and joining us. He can't technically give me a raise, but it wouldn't hurt to ask. Mark can technically give me a raise. Anyways, we will be back 2 weeks. 2 weeks, and maybe Mark will show up, maybe not. He's definitely out of the running for the glue. It's just me and Andy now, just going back and forth. Fill out the survey. Don't forget about that. Amazon gift cards. Come on, baby. All right, we'll be back. We'll talk about baseball because that's what we do. See you then.
I was very wrong.